I want to get on schedule if you got to get back to work. We have a lot of new faces, which is exciting. This will be our, what is it, Rob, fifth time? Yeah, Brett's been here every time. Of 1 Million Cups. And so I'll do a brief kind of rundown of what that is, since we do have some new faces. So 1 Million Cups, to me, is an event about kind of like collision and frequency and just getting people in our community, our entrepreneurial creative community, together on a weekly basis. The origin of the event comes from Kansas City. We got a fancy sign for people who have been here for a couple weeks. Got this new. So this is 1 Million Cups started from Kauffman Foundation, which is based in Kansas City. And Kauffman Foundation is a large foundation that does events and has grants and has a lot of programs to facilitate and support entrepreneurship. So the event started there. One of the young guys felt like when he was trying to be involved into his startup community in Kansas City, he always had to go out and drink beer, which isn't a terrible thing, but when it was like happy hour and developer meetup and tweetups and monthly events, he felt like he was always going out to drink. And he wanted an event that was maybe more weekly, because if you miss an event in your monthly entrepreneurship community, if you're traveling or you're busy with work, you go 60 days before you know are in touch with all these great people that motivate us and energize us. So 1 Million Cups was born with that idea in mind, is what would happen if we get entrepreneurs together to have a million cups of coffee, as they say here, building community one cup at a time. So that's the premise. It started in Kansas City and started to slowly bleed out to other cities. And I think about 31 or 32 cities now are doing this event like at the same time across America. And what's really cool is once you speak at your local 1 Million Cups, which would be Sioux Falls for all of us, you then have the network to go to any of the other cities and participate and speak. Kansas City, New York, Seattle, Tampa, wherever you want to go. So that's the premise. The people who put it on here locally is an organization called Falls Foundry. Falls Foundry is a nonprofit. We're working to try to help encourage entrepreneurship and creators and makers in the Sioux Falls area. So enough from me. I'm going to let you, I guess one more thing, the format for those people who are new, you get a 6-minute talk from our speaker of the week, and then you actually, we'll flip it over to you guys, and you get 20 minutes to do Q&A. So feel free to break Matt down, tell him that his idea is not good, or poke holes in it. I know a lot of you guys know Matt and are here because of him, so don't be afraid. Part of the goal of 1 Million Cups is for us all to help him and make his company and make his path as an entrepreneur a little easier, because we all know it's very difficult. So with that, I don't even know how to really give him a bio, because I know he does a ton of different things, but I know he is a professor, or was a professor, and does a lot of different entrepreneurial endeavors. So please welcome Matthew Paulson.
Thanks, John, and thank you all for coming. My name is Matthew Paulson. My business is called Analyst Trading's Network, which I started back in January of 2011. I do a lot of different things, but John told me I could only talk about one thing, so I'm talking about my investment newsletter business today. Prior to this, I had started an investing news website called American Banking and Market News in 2009, and that had done quite well. We were getting about 1 million page views per month, but we only had one customer, and that was Google. They sent us traffic through Google News, Search, and Finance, and we sent traffic back to their advertisers through the AdSense program. Of course, this works as long as they keep sending you traffic, but as everyone has learned in the last couple of years, that's no longer a guarantee. So I knew that if I was going to have a business that sticks around for the next 5, 10, or 15 years, that I'm going to need actual customers that are buying products and services from my company on a regular basis. Now, I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to sell my audience at that point, but I knew I needed a way to contact them directly, so that when I did have something to sell them, I would be able to get in touch with them. And you can't just put a sign-up form on your website that says, hey, give me your email address so I can sell you stuff. That doesn't work. So what I did is I took, we had a database of stock research data, and I compiled that and I sent it out in a daily newsletter, and that's really all it was. So I put that in a sign-up form on the website, and I just let it run. So it turns out it got quite a bit of initial traction. People are very emotionally invested in the stocks that they own, because if something good happens to your stock, you make money. If something bad happens to your stock, you lose money. It's very much like following a sports team. You watch ESPN, you watch the games, you want to know what's going on. The same thing is true for stocks. So we let it run for about 6 months, and at that time we had maybe 10,000 subscribers to the free email list. So I thought, you know, maybe it's time to try to sell these people, sell my audience something. I didn't, wasn't entirely sure, but I did. I was getting a lot of feedback about the newsletter and different changes people wanted to make. They wanted it to be sent out earlier in the morning so they'd have more time to plan their trades. They wanted some different formatting. They wanted some more analysis and a few different things. So I took all of the feedback that I'd gotten in, and I created a separate version of the newsletter. And I said, you can keep getting your free newsletter just the way it is. I don't care. It doesn't really cost me anything to send it to you. Or you can pay me $15 a month and get the fancy version of the newsletter that has all of the features that you told me that you wanted. So I sent out the initial, you know, saying, hey, it's available email. First month, we maybe sold 35 subscriptions. So most of those people prepaid for a year, and there was a little bit of a discount for the launch. So I probably only made $3,500 that first month. It wasn't a big success, but it wasn't a total failure either. So I just kind of let it run for the rest of 2011. You know, at that time, I started a lot of other irons in the fire, so I didn't have a ton of time to pay attention to this business unit. But by the end of 2011, we were at maybe 100 subscribers or about $10,000 in recurring annual revenue. So it's kind of a nice side business, but it certainly wasn't enough to feed the family at that point. 2012 was kind of really when I started to figure things out. I basically reevaluated every step of the process from when somebody lands onto my website to when they give me their credit card to sign up, and just, you know, thought, you know, how can I do every piece of this process, you know, better? So I grew the traffic to my network of financial news websites. We published more content. We got it into more different places. We worked on the opt-in mechanism, so we set up a pop-up on a website, and those worked really well to get sign-ups, and we split-tested the copy and did all sorts of stuff to get more people signing up. You know, once they were on kind of the free email newsletter, we set up an autoresponder series, and we did like time-limited discounts and other types of campaigns to get people to sign up for the premium version of the newsletter. We worked on the landing pages, you know, tested headlines, copy, pricing, just about everything you can. We started accepting credit cards directly instead of just PayPal, and that made a big difference. It turns out that a lot of people don't like PayPal, and on a 3-to-1 basis, people are typing their credit card over paying for PayPal for my business. So if that's, you're only taking PayPal, that's something to reevaluate. 2013, actually back to 2012, in the middle of the year we launched a piece of research software called RatingsDB, which basically gives people access to our database of stock ratings. And that way we had another product to sell people, and it also provides rankings of different brokerages. So we can say, hey, these 10 brokerages have really good track records in issuing ratings. The rest of these guys have terrible track records. You probably should listen to them. So people have found value in that as well. So by the end of 2012, we were at maybe $81,000 in recurring annual revenue. So we had gone from about 100 customers at the beginning of 2012 to about 800 customers at the end of 2012. 2013, last year, we were really able to capitalize on the gains that we made in 2012. I launched an ebook called The Trader's Guide to Equities Research. I came out with a guide that would teach people how to use the information in the newsletter to make trades with. So we sold a whole bunch of those at $39 a pop. We also really focused on marketing kind of in the second half of last year. So I started doing co-registration advertising. So when someone signs up for someone else's email list, they can also sign up for my list. They get a checkbox. We started doing Twitter cash tags, stock twits, which is basically Twitter for stocks. We launched an app called just Stock Ratings. It's in the App Store and Google Play Store. We have an AdWords campaign going and a few other things. So by the end of 2013, we had gone from about $81,000 in recurring annual revenue to, I think, $207,000 at the end of 2013. This year, where we're at today, we have 86,000-ish subscribers to the free newsletter. About 1,800 people are paying for one or more of my products. I think we're at about $250,000 in recurring annual revenue right now. Last month, we had 2.4 million page views on my network of websites. For the rest of this year, I'm doing a thing with Charity Water in May, so that when people sign up, half of their first year subscription will go to Charity Water, and we keep the other half, you know, for operational costs. So that's coming up. July, we're doing a new version of RatingsDB, and I'm working on a pretty big advertising deal for a company called Investing Media Solutions that wants to sell ads to my list. So that's potentially pretty lucrative as well. That's kind of where we're at today. So with that, I guess I will open it up for questions.
Give it up for Matt. All right, so you were well rehearsed 6 minutes and like 4 seconds. So now it's your guys' turn. Let's ask Matt some questions.
Dean?
So how, you know, you're selling products, information products around the investment space.
Yep.
How married are you to that space? Is your value add what you know and what you can tell people about investments, or is your value add the information distribution? Could you take that platform and do air conditioning industry news today?
Maybe, but the financial news industry is so well targeted for this because people are used to paying for these types of products. So my value add is really the stock ratings database. No one else has been able to compile it in the way that I have. So I take about 30 different disparate data sources and stick them into a database. It all happens automatically, and no one else has been able to do that. It's not terribly hard, but maybe no one has thought to do it, or no one else has just been able to do it. So that's kind of the thing that I have that no one else can really do. Certainly, I'm pretty good at collecting email addresses, better than most. That's a value add. And, you know, I know the programming side of it, so I can, you know, make the process really smooth. And there are a lot of tools out there, like Infusionsoft, that would do a good chunk of, like, the subscription management, that kind of stuff. But the fact that I can do the end-to-end thing has been really helpful.
So why finance? Is it because people are used to paying for it?
So the reason I opted for finance thing, there's a few different reasons. One, I'm interested in it. Two, it's pretty easy to do SEO for that, to get the traffic. The game is a little bit different than just a regular website trying to get traffic from Google. It's basically around stock tickers. So basically Google Finance, stock twits, everything is based around, you know, an individual company, so I can write an article about that company, and then people will read that, land on my website, hopefully click an ad or sign up for my newsletter. So there's interest, and there's also a good opportunity there. Don?
Matt, what kind of regulatory considerations do you have?
Really, there aren't that much. I'm not, you know, obviously not providing, like, financial advice. I'm just providing information. And, you know, we have a pretty big disclaimer, you know, saying that, you know, we don't offer financial advice. You're making trades based on your own decisions. It's really never been an issue. I think that comes more into play when you are, you know, a financial advisor offering, you know, professional advice, which we're, and if there's a big legal definition, we're not doing that, so we're okay. Yeah.
Right. So in regards to accepting credit cards, obviously PayPal is a pretty simple turnkey operation for somebody. Mm-hmm. So how did you, you know, create that solution, and then what kind of savings do you get from that?
The costs are the same, so there's no savings, actually. If with PayPal, you can get down to 2.2% plus 30% per transaction, and Stripe, our payment provider, is 2.9 cents plus 30 cents per transaction. So it's actually a little bit more expensive, but giving people the option is really a good idea because you get more signups. Because some people just hate PayPal because they've had a negative experience with them. So that's kind of why. There's no real savings, but it's not as hard as it seems. Stripe makes things really easy to accept credit cards, and now they even have, like, a little form on your website that you can just put on to take money to. Dean?
So what's the biggest existential threat? You talked about in the previous incarnation, Google sent you business. Without Google, you were kind of sunk.
Yep.
What keeps you up at night with this model?
Not much.
You have an 18 year old, I know.
You also recognize that this isn't my only business. I've got three or four other things going on that all make me money. And chances are that not all of them are going to tank at the same time. So there's some diversification there.
What's the biggest existential threat to this thing? What could cause this thing to tank tomorrow?
It would never be a tomorrow thing because I have recurring revenue. I guess if my payment providers both, like, banned me on the same day, that would be bad news. But I don't see that happening. I mean, it'd either be that or SendGrid told me that they were going to stop sending my emails. So either of those two things would be horrible. But I think I could get around them eventually.
I'm curious. I appreciate your transparency. You seem like a guy who measures a lot of things.
Yep.
So maybe actually not relevant to your business, but to the audience. Like, if you do something, a model similar to this model, what metrics to you, like separating vanity metrics from things that actually,
yep.
You know, you said we added credit cards instead of just PayPal and it made blank percentage increase. So, like, what type of things would you recommend people track?
Sure. Traffic to your website, that's probably not something to track because, you know, I can go out and buy, you know, a 10,000 page views for nothing and it won't be worth anything to me. So really what you want to track is your conversion rate from your website to whatever kind of thing you want them to sign up for, whether that be a paid product or you just want them on your email list. So you want certainly want to track that. And then you certainly want to track your conversion rate from your whatever kind of list you have to whatever you want to sell them. Mine is about 3% right now, and that's about where it's going to be. So that's something to track. You want to track the lifetime value of your customer. You know, how much is a person worth to me over the time period that they're going to be my customer? My average customer is worth maybe $250 to me because the average person will stick around for 2 years. I'm trying to think what else. Your churn rate, so the percentage of people that cancel, whatever you're doing every month, you want to track that. So if you see that more people are canceling, that can tell you that there's a problem. Those are definitely some good numbers to start with.
So in terms of the content, you said you tested, you kind of did some A/B testing with headlines and a variety of things. Where do you come up with this? Do you just sort of come up with it out of your head, or do you pull it from different sources, or
sure.
How did you figure all of that out?
Well, there are certain things that everybody should split test, like the text on a button, the look of the button, the headline, kind of the copy. Really, you test everything. And, you know, for some of the ideas, there are a lot of people doing financial stuff. So I just went around looking at landing pages, seeing what people are using for headlines, and copied a bunch of theirs and just to see what worked. So I do like 5 or 6 headlines at a time, run them for 2 months, and say, all right, out of these, which had the best conversion rate?
Outside of gaining more subscriptions and subscribers,
yep.
What do you see as next with your newsletter?
Sure. Well, obviously the goal is to keep it growing, and there are, you know, 3 ways to do that. There's to get new customers, to sell more stuff to your existing customers, and to keep them sticking around longer. Certainly, my churn rate is about 5% a month, and that's pretty good for the type of thing that I do. I'd love to get that down to 4 or 3, because eventually the rate that people cancel are going to match up with the rate that people are signing up, and it'll kind of flatline. So I really have to keep improving the metrics over time, otherwise I'm going to hit that wall. So I'd really like to get that down. Certainly, there's probably room for another product at some point. I'm not quite sure what that is. But when you already have 2,000 people handing you money, it's not a bad idea to find something else and say, hey, you want to buy this too?
And yeah, give us like I think you said you might have at least four things going on. Can you give us the 20-second overview on these other things? Because you are obviously entrepreneurial. And
yep.
So how varied are these other?
Yep. So I have a press release distribution business called Lightning Releases, so I can get people's press releases into Google News, Bing News, and places like that. I have a business with Jason back here called GoGo Photo Contest, which allows humane societies and animal shelters to run kind of photo contest fundraisers. We've raised $60,000 for humane societies across the country in the last month, and we may only make 5 or 10% of that, so it's not a huge business, but that's been going pretty well. I had a consulting business that I recently shut down because I'm tired of selling my time for money. I own part of a rental house somewhere.
No. somewhere? Not sure where.
Well, it's on Glendale, but it's, let's see, what else? Yeah, those are the big things. I have a lot of different little websites. I have a website called like Video County that gets licensed videos from Grab Network and puts them into like Bing Video and Google Video, and that gets me 1,000 page views a day and makes a few $100 a month. So I have a lot of different little things like that floating around that I built like 3 years ago that are still making a few $100 a month.
So on the photo contest, does the nonprofit pay you to run that contest? Or?
So we get a percentage of whatever they raise. It's 15% for the first 5,000, then 5% after that.
How do they raise money? Do people pay to send their photo in?
Yep, people pay $1 per like, there might be an entry fee, or they pay like $1 per vote, and then the person with the most votes at the end of the contest will win a prize that they set. Like, we're working with Petco, and we're working with San Diego Humane Society and a few other places like that. So we've been able to get the name out there pretty good.
Do you get approached by companies for your mailing list?
Yes. I don't sell it, but I will do like it's called a dedicated email. So people will send me their copy and I'll mail it to my list. And the CPMs for that are surprisingly good. It's like $50 per 1,000 subscribers, so you have 86,000 subscribers. It ends up being $4,000 for every email they want to send. So I've been talking to a company called Investing Media Solutions, and I'm probably going to do it with them because the money's so good. So that could be, you know, another $10,000 a month. So it's hard to say no to that.
Can you talk a little bit about the beginnings of the database again, how you grew your list, how
sure.
you started it? Because you went over it, but it's kind of quick.
So with the ratings database, I had been reporting on, you know, ratings on our website, and so much of the work was the same day after day after day, and eventually I figured, you know, there's got to be a way to automate this. So like over Thanksgiving in 2010, I just spent all weekend writing code, and eventually I had something that worked. So, you know, the ratings show up on our website automatically, and that's kind of how that came to be. Does that answer your question?
Turkey code instead of turkey coma?
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the emails that you get sent out, those are automated as well, right? All the content is all generated.
Yeah, like the daily newsletter got sent out, and I didn't even think about it this morning. It's all handled by code and point in data feeds, and you're just compiling HTML newsletter, and it gets sent out automatically.
And is that both the paid and the free ones, or both automated?
Yep, they're both automated. Certainly there's more that goes into the premium newsletter, because there's just more data there, but it's... I don't know, I get emails and stuff breaks, so that's really when I have to start doing work. Yes?
I think you mentioned that you did some like Google AdWords and some like targeted marketing.
Yep.
What's, just out of curiosity, what's your monthly or daily ads budget or marketing budget for that?
For AdWords, we only spend like $500 a month. It's really like 5 or 6 keywords that are very targeted to what I do that I want to make sure people see me for. So that's not a huge source of... huge source of traffic for me, but it's something that I don't want to miss out on because those people are so targeted that are searching for those keywords. It's like 500 a month, so that's not a huge thing.
If someone wanted to start something like you did, and you said you chose finance, but mm-hmm. what would be the golden nugget you'd give someone? If I said I wanted to start a newsletter for whatever industry, what would kind of be
the key
metrics that I would go after?
And the key is building your audience. And you need to find a way to get lots of people to sign up, so you really just have to, you know, figure out, you know, what industry am I in, where are they hanging out, in person or online, and how can I reach them? You know, there's not that much special about the newsletter. It's really having an audience and then having something you can keep sending them to kind of maintain a relationship over a long period of time.
Bill? So, man, do you think it helps if you were really interested in Slack to start with? Do you think you could have done this if you didn't have any interest in the subject?
Maybe. I mean, it's a classic question of passion versus profit. I think you have to have some interest in whatever you're doing. I don't know that you have to be like madly in love with it, because then your passion becomes just a job, and sometimes it can ruin it. So I was interested in stocks, but I wasn't spending all day on my computer doing day trading. But I knew enough about it so that I could do it and not get sick of it.
Got a few more minutes for questions.
What's one thing you would have done differently?
I would have quit my day job 2 years before I did. Well, you know, once you quit your day job and can focus fully on something, there's really, you have a lot more time, and your best energy is devoted to your business. So, I don't know. My recommendation to people that have something going on the side is, as soon as it, you know, can feed your family, you should make the leap, because the second that you're self-employed, you'll have so much more energy and focus to pursue all the things that you wanted to pursue but never had time to. I mean, when I quit my day job, like 6 months after that, my revenue in my business had doubled. So that was a good move for me, and I've seen a few other people that have had similar situations, so I strongly recommend that when you can.
What was your day job?
I was a website developer for a company at Pure. So I did ASP.NET code all day. So when I was done with that, I was not terribly motivated to write stuff for my business.
I'm curious. You know, I just met you in, let's see, maybe about a year ago from Will, and then we've been in touch. And you know, but before that, I didn't know about you. And you're kind of like a one-man band, I would say. I mean, you probably have people working for you remotely, or so. How do you stay motivated as like solopreneur, I guess. I don't know, maybe you don't like that title. But.
Sure. Well, I do have a team. I have an employee that works for me in town. And I have another guy in Florida that works for me, and I have a few people that write for me, and I have an accounting person. So there's a team there. I mean, we don't meet in an office. But staying motivated is, it's a good question. I'm motivated by, I get motivated by numbers, so I love to see improvements in conversion rates and stuff like that. You know, that keeps me motivated. It's just a business I have fun doing. I could probably not do it and be okay for a while, but you know, there has to become a point when you're doing it for a reason other than the money. And I just get so excited about the business, I can't help but work on it.
Sarah.
Is there anything you had to stop doing as part of your business that really hurt you? Because you're a numbers guy, and so is there something that you really liked that you had to stop based on kind of the data analytics you're seeing?
Yeah, certainly. There are, like I like helping people build websites, but in terms of profitability, that's one of the least profitable things that for my time. So last year I made $35,000 building people websites, and it just took up maybe 20 or 30% of my time, and then I had to get rid of that because, you know, based on the amount of time I could, you know, what I could sell it for versus the time I put in, it just wasn't worth doing.
A couple more minutes.
Yeah?
There's somebody that's interested in trying to get some revenue online. Are there any things you see in the future, or what has the most potential going forward if somebody wants to spend more money on business?
It's a good question. I think there are things that, and really, I think the key for somebody that wants to get started online is find a way that other people are already making money online and doing exactly what they do. So certainly there are people building apps that are making money. There are people with kind of content websites that have ad revenue. I think it's a nice idea to think you can get in on the ground floor or something and really make that happen, but it's hard to know what that is. So I always tell people just to find something you're interested in that people are already making money online and then just do what they do, because that's tends to work. It's, you know, if it's a proven model, you just are willing to put in the work, you're probably going to make the money.
Like Candy Crush?
You could do that.
A million a day.
Although that's a hit-driven business, so for every Candy Crush, there are 1,000 more people that have little apps that have never made any money.
We got time for one more. Don?
Do you see yourself starting a new business anytime soon, or are you going to focus on the ones since that's...
Sure. So last year...
You're focusing on a few of the ones we're doing.
Sure.
I'm sure this is a lot more. You got a couple more that you might be thinking.
Yeah. Last year I started 3 new businesses, so this year the goal is to start 0. So I'm sure I'll get some crazy idea at some point in the future, but this year my goal is to really focus on the things that are doing really well for me and pay attention to those.
All right, so for those of you who are new to 1 Million Cups, you've been here every time, so you're a pro, but you know this is coming. The last question we always ask is, you know, how can we, as the Sioux Falls area or South Dakota startup community, help you?
Sure. So one thing I want to know what part of my business sucks. So go to my websites and tell me, you know, what you think is terrible. I'm not a great website designer or anything like that. The names of my businesses are pretty plain. My websites don't look pretty, but they do pretty well, you know, money wise. Go to analystratings.net, go to googlephotocontest.com, go to lightningreleases.com, check them out, and tell me what sucks about them. And the other thing is, I'm starting to learn about angel investing, so if anyone is pro at that, other than Tom and Ben, talk to me, and I would love to buy you lunch.
All right, give it up for Matt.
Thanks.